And welcome to the Business of Family Business, telling family business stories from across the St. Louis region. It's presented by CMA Consulting, and this week we'll be talking to Mark Waldman from Lori Shoes. What goes into running a family shoe business, one that started over 65 years ago? I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We'll be joined with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting on this week's Business of Family Business. I love stories of family businesses. If you would like to share your family business story or you know a family business, encourage them to email Dan Bean at CMA Consulting. Just reach out to him, let him know. CMAconsult.com is the website, and perhaps we can feature them on a future show, just like we are featuring Lori Shoes. Mark Waldman now joins us on the Business of Family Business. How did you get involved with the business? What's your personal involvement, and where did it start for you?
Actually, in a family business, I started probably cleaning the restrooms when I was nine and did inventory. And it was a classic family business where you do everything and anything. And emotionally, you get involved in the business as if it were a sibling. The business becomes the third or fourth sibling because you're essentially treating it as a significant other.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt. So I've been involved in it probably ever since I can remember.
Well, that's how kids normally get involved in some way, cleaning or whatnot.
Right.
Did that happen? Do you have kids?
Yeah, I've got three children.
Did they grow up in the business too?
Not like I did. I think the generation that I came from, my parents and my grandparents were in probably involving the grandkids and the children more so than what we do. I think today our generation, at least from what I can gather, we wanted our kids or want our kids to go ahead and see what's going on around them and not put pressure or put them in a position where they would automatically go into the family business unless they wanted to.
So who founded Lowry's?
Lowry's was founded in 1951 by my grandfather and my father and mother. It actually started where our first store is on Manchester in Glendale. Built actually as a bomb shelter, just so you're aware. It was during the Korean incident. My grandfather was a marketing whiz, and I think he did two things. I think he did it because he enjoyed the recognition of the fact that he built one of the few bomb sound buildings apparently in the Midwest, and plus I think he was interested in probably marketing the concept and telling everybody about what he had done. And he went and found builders and architects from around the country because it had never been attempted before.
Was he someone that's pretty savvy when it comes to marketing?
He seemed to be. As I remember, he was from Romania by way of Canada, and he was always a very sharp guy. He was in the wholesale shoe business initially.
Okay.
So he was on Washington Avenue across from the old International Shoe Company.
So did he migrate here from Canada?
He came from Canada. Yes, he migrated from Canada. I think a whole group of immigrants came from Canada by way of Russia and probably made their way here during probably the 1918, 1916, up through 1920s.
Do you know why they chose St. Louis?
I think there probably is a relative somewhere. Anytime I read information about why people move someplace, generally it's because there's probably a distant relative. I think it was a distant relative that may have been here when they came. So I think that's what brought them here.
Do you know why your grandpa got into the business, and what were some of the things he may have taught you while you were growing up too?
He actually had apparently, and this could have been through familial connections, he had connections in the shoe business, because back in the 1920s, 1918, St. Louis was known as the shoe capital of probably not only the country, but the world, and also a beer capital. So I think they always mentioned that St. Louis was the home of shoes and booze. And back then, he got involved. He had a broken English. He also had a gravelly voice. They called him Hot Cup Goldman because he used to drink boiling coffee and throw it down his throat. And we thought maybe that caused the gravelly voice. It didn't. He just had a gravelly voice. So it reminded me a little bit of what I would romanticize to be the Godfather.
Yeah.
So he wore a flower in his lapel, was always very well dressed, but he got in the shoe business, I think, because of probably connections and the way, and, you know, the fact that St. Louis was a shoe capital. So he began to buy and sell footwear from manufacturers, and being around International Shoe, he bought closeouts and then sold them to retailers at that time.
Yeah. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I want to talk to you about that story. So from Canada, moved to St. Louis and create the business from there. When family businesses start in that generation, in this case, this would be generation number one coming through, and Mark would be the third generation of the business owner. How frequent do you hear stories like that where they learn from their grandparents and they start by cleaning the bathrooms?
So it's great that a family business can offer the opportunity for children in their early teenage years to work in the business during high school and college. They learn basic work skills, and they learn a work ethic, and they learn how to earn money, and that's great. The one caution I would offer is when children of the owner come into the business, if they do things that are irresponsible or unsafe, that's going to be noted, and that's going to become a story that stays on that company grapevine for years and sometimes decades. So just be careful about bringing in children into the business when it's appropriate to do so.
A lot has changed in the business in 60-plus years. We'll get a snapshot of what the shoe business looked like in the 50s. We continue our interview with Mark Waldman on the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting. Business of Family Business is presented by CMA. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and we're highlighting family businesses from across the St. Louis region. And if you're part of a family business, maybe you own one or maybe you know one, let them know about this program. Or maybe we can even highlight them. Just reach out to Dan Bean at cmaconsult.com. We continue our conversation with Mark Waldman from Lori Shoes. What would the shoe business look like back in the 50s?
At that point, there was a lot of, similar stores to what we had presented, what we had presented currently, which was what we call sit and fit, where you walk in, we measure your foot, see what size width that you wear, then go in the back and find out what your needs are and bring out an assortment of footwear to try on. The difference with Lori Shoes back in the 50s, which my grandfather and parents came up with, was probably very unusual and very unknown to most people. They built a building on Manchester in Glendale. At that time, the hub of the business was somewhere in Maplewood and East. Mm-hmm. So they built this building in the middle of essentially the country. Mm-hmm. And they came up with a concept which is not new today. In fact, it was big in the 70s, where they felt that if they had an assortment of shoes to offer the customer an exposed inventory at better prices, the consumer would take a bus from Maplewood and also or drive out to buy footwear at a reduced rate with a big selection. Mm-hmm. So they actually were one of the first, as I understand it, actually west of the Mississippi, that opened up what would have been considered to be a off-price type of shoe outlet. Mm-hmm. And again, this came from my grandfather's involvement with the wholesale shoe business.
You said at the time there wasn't anything out there. It was kind of empty.
Right. There was nothing at all. They went and picked the area based on Manchester that ran, I guess at this point, Manchester runs all the way from downtown. It was Manchester Avenue, downtown out to the area that we're in, which is about a mile and a half east of Lindbergh, a mile west of McKnight. So at that time, there's nothing there but dirt roads, and there's pictures of residential homes that have been built there. And this large, about 6,000 to 8,000 square foot building being built out of, you know, lead and and other bomb-proof materials.
When it comes to the business by itself, how have you seen it change over the years? Because we're talking about decades and decades of selling shoes. It's had to have changed over the years.
It has. I got involved, like I said, I was always involved in the business in some capacity. One thing I will tell you about our family, we are born and bred St. Louisans. We obviously went to, you know, elementary school, grade school, high school, and we all went to colleges here in St. Louis. During that, though, the main interest for us, or I know from my point of view, was working at the store and then kind of going to school and such along with that. But the difference was, we were very, to us what was very important was the better grade footwear sizes and widths and fit and making the customer happy. And today you hear that as a survival tactic for a lot of storefronts today who did not or have not followed that logic of service and those kind of things. So it's everything does come around, and I think they use a 10 to 15 year basis for how things repeat.
At Lori's, what's the largest shoe you guys sell?
We carry up to 18.
18?
Yes, we carry 18, and we do. In fact, I've got a lot of stories because, I was fitting shoes to some of the St. Louis Hawks way back when. I think I was 13, and I was fitting shoes. Ed McCauley was a customer, and I'll just remember trying to sell him a pair of Converse All-Stars, and it was just fun. I just was fortunate enough to have met some of the greatest people my whole life, but it was a ball. It was still the sit and fit, but we met so many people because it was, as I said earlier, a lot of what we call standalone type of shoe stores was very prominent back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. The 80s, you start seeing big box off price, and we actually never got there. I think we started in the 51 as that kind of concept, then we changed it over the years in the 50s and late 50s and 60s to full service and better grade. But it definitely dominated what we did, and our service got better and our selection got bigger.
Like, how often does someone come in to ask for an size 18? That can't happen too often.
You would be surprised how many people out there have what we call unusual feet. We have widths up to 6E's, and these are people that fortunately, you know, have such a wide foot that when they walk in, you automatically are looking going, my gosh, that is a challenge. And we end up fitting a lot of these people. 18s, we probably get a couple a month, and more often we get a lot of 15s and 16s. Mm-hmm. So you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people who are looking for those, but again, in the world of big box, you don't see the suppliers providing that.
Yeah, because I've never been fitted for a shoe before. Do you think a lot of people have been, or do you think that some people just kind of skip over that experience today?
There's no doubt that my generation, which is baby boomer, we were used to it. We got used to online buying. We got used to big box buying. But you will still see the baby boomers dominate the fact that they come back and they enjoy the experience. Millennials look at this like a whole new approach to buying shoes. I mean, imagine what I grew up with and found it very common. The millennials walk in today, and to them it is like, wow, this is really cool, or it's fun.
Yeah.
They're measuring my feet. And at some point when we are doing that and they are not sure what to expect, we come forward with them with a Brannock device, which is a foot measuring device, and actually it measures their foot. And as we get closer, you'll find them pulling back because they find that we're invading their space. So what's funny is watching the reaction of people who have never been fit before.
Yeah.
But once they get involved, it's like, I can get used to this real easy.
Well, explain to me, as someone that's never gone through this, and I'm sure there's people listening too, because I'm a millennial, I'm on the older end of the millennial scale. So after you get fitted for a shoe, how does that differ feeling-wise from just buying a box off the shelf?
The difference is when you come back, we've got anywhere from 25 to 40,000 pairs of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a lot of shoes.
A lot of shoes, a lot of sizes, a lot of widths, a lot of styles. Mm-hmm. When a customer walks in, we measure them with, again, it's a classic measuring stick. It's been around for forever. It's a Brannock device. It measures the length of your foot, measures the width of your foot. Over time and experience, we can look at the instep or the top of your foot, the thick part of your foot, and say, okay, what will it look like? What shoe would accommodate that foot?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of intelligence involved in fitting a shoe on a person. It isn't just sitting there measuring the foot. You have to sit back and say, what is their arch length?
Yeah.
That's the length between the ball, the foot, and a little bump right before your big toe. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that goes into this for a real classic, very good fit. So many times people walk in our stores, and this is dominant why so many people come into our stores. Mm-hmm. They haven't been fit appropriately, and their feet are killing them. Some have gone to the point of being operated on because they thought it was a something that had to be cured. Well, realistically, it was, believe it or not, a bad fit. So mm-hmm. we do a lot of work with that. But that's the process is quick,
yeah.
But it is very, I mean, we actually make a science out of it.
If you're part of a business, you know things rarely stay the same. So how do family businesses adapt, especially in the shoe business? We'll ask Mark Waldman from Lori Shoes coming up next. It's part of the Business of Family Business presented by CMA Consulting. Business of Family Business. We highlight family businesses from across the St. Louis region and beyond. And if you would like to highlight your family business, reach out to CMA Consulting. Dan Bean, cmaconsult.com is the website. Let them know you're interested in having your family business story told on this program. We're back with Mark Waldman from Lori Shoes. So how have you made decisions to adapt to like a new base of people coming in and buying shoes, like millennials, for example? So when Lori Shoes decides to make a decision based on the buying trends of a new generation, what kind of things go into that decision-making process, and what are some of those decisions you've made?
The process involves a lot of study, a lot of reading. We buy internationally. We bought in Europe. We actually, there's shows in New York and there's shows in Vegas. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we look at what our market is, what St. Louis is all about. Mm-hmm. We tend to trend fashion-wise toward the East Coast. Mm-hmm. The West Coast has a lot going on still. And even though the internet does give information, mm-hmm. To people who are searching, you would think that would accelerate fashion in this part of the country. This is a very classic, traditional part of the country. Mm-hmm. We still pull a lot of fashion from the East Coast. But what we'll do is we research, we see what's going on, then we build in the concept of what St. Louis is all about.
Yeah.
I think they tend to be somewhat utilitarian. When I get a fast, what we call a fast-looking shoe, we generally will add to that shoe something that makes it a little bit more sturdy.
Yeah.
So in this market, waterproofing is important. You know, waterproof footwear is important. So I might get right now, I have a brand called Samuel Hubbard, which is a phenomenal brand. They make Vibram sole bottoms, and you'll see a lot of light-colored men's soled shoes with dark uppers. Hmm. This has been going on with some of the Cole Haans we carry, that type of thing. What's going on is, here in St. Louis, we'll sell that shoe with a thicker Vibram rubber bottom that's more durable, with a leather upper that's also more durable, instead of something that they may wear on the West Coast, which might be that version with a canvas upper. Mm-hmm. So these are things that we know about. I've done this 42 years. So you know about the market, and it does change. You have to be open for change.
Yeah.
It's one thing I enjoy about the fashion industry.
Yeah. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, open to change. Do you think family businesses, do you see they kind of have that extra personal touch where they're able to customize and be able to better adapt to people in a local community?
So absolutely. And part of what it made Mark and his business successful is the ability to find the niche market to differentiate themselves from the mass retailers or the big box shops. Mm-hmm. They have found a market, an identity, and they have stayed with it over decades, and mm-hmm. it has, I think, let them not just survive but also thrive in an industry where a lot of big names have gone out of business. And mm-hmm. I think it is finding that niche and that focus and then doing that extremely well, providing good service, good quality, good price, a good experience, and doing it repeatedly and staying current with the market. Those are all always a recipe for a successful business.
Right. So, Mark, at Lori's, your grandpa, did he transition the company to your dad?
They actually opened it together.
Okay.
My grandfather provided a resource for merchandise, mm-hmm. and my father and mother were involved in the daily running of the operation.
Okay. So when your father and mother were thinking about retiring or pass it along, were you someone that was actively involved in the business at that time, or how did you get into a role of where you're looking at possibly ownership?
I actually was interested, but I was probably this occurred in the 70s. I was probably interested in possibly going to law school or getting a business degree immediately in a 4-year. And at that point, my dad, who had been ill with rheumatoid arthritis, had asked me back in 75, 76 if I would be interested in handling the business for a year because he's getting to the point where he can't do it.
Yeah.
And I, at that point, had just been accepted to Wash U and was going to go there and said, I'll be glad to take it for a year. And, you know, but, you know, I don't know what it is I want to do exactly. And again, I had been involved, but not involved 100%. But I was pretty well involved. But I got into it and fell in love with it. It met all the needs and desires that I had on top of altruistically helping customers with a lot of those needs that they have and the need I had for providing fashion and comfort for this market. So it worked out well for all of us. I mean, I have never looked back and regretted. I've loved every minute of it.
Yeah. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I have a brother, a younger brother, and a middle sister.
Yeah.
And both of them are involved in the business.
Oh, were they involved at that time? I mean, did they have interest?
I got involved in the mid-70s. They came on board in the late 70s.
Okay.
My brother was an exec over at Six Flags, and my sister did a lot of executive work, but she had done some retail work with Helen Wolf, which was a classic soft good clothing store in St. Louis. And both of them got involved and fell in love with the business as much as I did.
And they're still in it today?
They're still in it today.
Oh, that's great. How do you guys work together?
We work together real well. I mean, it is. There's no doubt that when you own a family business, as I mentioned earlier, it becomes like another sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And it also probably becomes the primary sibling because everything seems to bow to the needs of that, if you will, older sibling. Mm-hmm. So I think we all grew up with understanding from my father and mother who were definitely involved in teaching us, you know, those kind of points. We were very much obedient to a lot of the needs of the company to the point that today we've enjoyed it and had a great time with it, but we also, relationship-wise, it's different when you own a family business. Mm-hmm. It's very positive, but it's a different interpretation.
Do you talk a lot about the family business outside of work?
We try not to. That was part of, I think, the understanding we had that we work very hard at when we're in the business, and then when we're outside, we work hard at probably, I would say, enjoying our life, our family life with our kids and everything. And again, as much as we try not to, we still talk a lot about the business, but we don't do it consciously. We try. It always comes up unconsciously.
So. Right. So when your parents were ready to step down, did you become the sole owner or did your brother and sister become partial owners as well at that time?
No, we actually are equal owners in the business.
Right. Okay.
And I think our parents did that more or less to probably harmonize the business going forward.
So how do you guys make decisions and what does that look like on the ownership side?
What's interesting is the three of us all have different interests in what we do in the business. I would say I'm president of the company, so I think a lot of the major final decisions, although we decide equally about what needs to be done, I probably would be the one that makes the final decision on what we're going to do and head. But again, all of us are involved fairly equally in deciding changes and adjustments to different parts of the business.
So, Mark, how does that lead into how you manage and govern your business?
What we do is we do have a game plan. We do have what one would consider shareholder meetings, governance meetings in regard to where we want to move forward. We generally will run anywhere from once to twice a year. We used to try and do it monthly. We spent a lot of time actually monthly where we really didn't get a lot done, so we cut it back to once and twice a year. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, there we will talk about where we're headed and what we need to do. And generally what's good about our business is because of the people involved, all three of us having different interests, we seem to kind of run on our own with me overseeing what's going on between the three of us. Mm-hmm. But things kind of percolate on their own and do well in that regard. But we do have to have these shareholder meetings once or twice a year to essentially discuss where we're headed with the company.
Right. So does that mean the company's publicly traded? Is that what you mean by shareholder?
Yeah, publicly traded by three.
Yeah,
It's not shareholder is a catch all. We're all shareholders, and at this point, though it would be interesting to see what the next generation does.
Yeah.
We don't think this is ever going to go public, but. Privately, it's been the three of us.
Okay. So Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I want to talk about this management style and how the family operates in that sense when it comes to public meetings, I guess a couple of meetings a year when it comes to shareholding and the governance of the business. So can you elaborate on some of that?
Yeah, it's very admirable that they do that. Most family businesses, they have a management team and somebody runs the organization. Well, clearly Mark and his siblings have that. They have to have a board of directors if they're a corporation, but they often are inactive, and they have to have a formal meeting, which usually means the lawyer writes some notes and somebody signs it, but they never actually meet. So The fact that they have board meetings is great, and hardly any family business ever have shareholder meetings.
Wow.
And shareholders is where their owners get together as owners. And it does mimic what happens in a public company, and it's great that they do that because the shareholder meeting, the board meeting, and management team meetings are three different forums where the family, our family and others, particularly when you get into management, can get together and share information and discuss things and make decisions, evaluate plans, and do everything that they have to do to keep everybody aligned and pointed in the same direction. And for these guys to do it as shareholders, again, I take my hat off to them. It is very seldom done. I can probably count on my fingers among over 100 businesses that have shareholder meetings.
Hmm. We continue one more time with Mark Waldman from Lori Shoes on the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and I learn a lot about how family businesses operate. They're similar to other businesses, but in other ways, they're not. How often do you actually go home and sit across the dinner table from someone that you work with all day or maybe co-own a business with? I want you to imagine what it's like when a business owner is ready to make a decision. You know, there's that emotional factor too. So CMA Consulting, they lead a multidisciplinary team to help family businesses unify the next generation, especially to develop them to be effective owners for people and talent experts, tax and accounting and legal and banking, risk management, and even beyond. You know, CMA excels in helping increase the odds of a successful generational transition because family harmony is important. CMA, reach out to them. They have a complimentary, no obligation meeting to discuss your family business or any other types of transitions you have planned. And even the Business of Family Business Ownership Program has been very effective. You need to find out about that if you're part of a family business. Go to cmaconsult.com or call 314-721-1860 to see if this program is right for you or your family business. The website every family business needs to know, cmaconsult.com.
It's a family affair. It's a family affair.
We're back one last time with Mark Waldman from Lori Shoes. It's the Business of Family Business presented by CMA Consulting, talking to family businesses from across the St. Louis region and beyond. We'd like to learn their story. In these meetings, do you talk about a fourth generation or what'll happen next?
Yes, we actually have been fortunate that we have a fourth generation entering into the business. We need to address that, you know, going forward, you know, a lot stronger than we have. We definitely see that the outlook of that other generation is very important to the sustenance of our business and where it's going to head. And I think the beauty about our view of our business is the fact that I want our fourth generation going forward to have the freedom to make those mistakes and fall on their face the way that I did and my sister and brother did. And it's very important to me to make sure that happens. And it's difficult because we all think at some point that we know what's going on and what we're doing. What's different about our business is, and the way I look at things, I do want them to make mistakes and big mistakes.
Mark, what are some of those mistakes you learned from?
Wow. Well, the first thing I learned was when I was 13 years old, I don't mimic a 70-year-old. One of our sales reps sold for Saks and moonlighted with us, and he said some things to women in regard to how their shoes looked, and it isn't anything that is going to be there'd be a legal battle in, but he would say to somebody how nice the shoe looked on their leg, and here at 13 I was mimicking him. So what happened was they laughed at it, thank goodness. But when I look back, I said to myself, I don't know how I got away with that, but I learned from him how to sell. I didn't have the wherewithal to put who was saying it in place to whom. So I think that was my first experience in learning. Just because you learn from somebody verbatim, you don't repeat it, because your body doesn't have who you are at your age doesn't look well with what's coming out of your mouth to a man who's 70 selling shoes. So that was my first difficult experience. After that, learning again about the processes of buying and selling, the processes that when I grew up in the business in the 60s and 70s, I found that my business did not have a great recognition by the consumer. I think shoe salesmen per se were somewhere on the list of people you distrust. Like, regrettably, and although it's changed, a car salesman used to be up there also under those impressions, and that's all changed today. But I wanted to make things different, and fortunately we succeeded, that we really care about the fit and the sizes and what goes on your foot. When years ago, back in the 60s, all those guys did, and women that sold, is throw a shoe on your foot, and their goal was to tell you whatever they needed to tell you to get the shoe out the door. We are in a situation where I would think people might say we're a white elephant. We're one of the few types of operations, really, not only in the state of Missouri, but in the country. I think you'll find an operation like us, one in every major city, if that many. And when I grew up, there was a lot more, but they've all are gone. And I think, as Dan said, having the drive and the enjoyment and the excitement to make this succeed and love what you do is such an important part of succeeding. We try our best, and it's not always right. We do the best we can, but our main thing is it's the customer that drives us. We truly, and this is could be inherent for my grandfather and my parents, we love making and satisfying our customer, and I think that's driven me for 42 years. I know it's driven my sister and brother and my parents and my grandfather, and I think that's something that's in you. But I don't know if it's learned, but I certainly can tell you it's something that's a drive that makes what we do successful and fun. We talk a lot about family businesses and the family. I think it must be said that the personnel you surround yourself with, the people that you choose to be part of what you're doing, that is the most important. You have the input to bring people in. You better have the wherewithal to give them the power and the position to make those decisions, because they are the ones that make your business successful. The family can take all the credit they want. It's the people that work for that family and work with the family. I shouldn't say work with the family that make it successful. And we appreciate them.
Mark, co-owner of Lori Shoes, thank you so much for coming in, sharing your family business story here today.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this conversation, you can go to KMOX.com in the podcast section and actually listen back to this and many other interviews we've had on the business of family business. It's presented by CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. It was a pleasure to be with you today. We'll see you soon.